May the words I speak and the words we hear be your words of life to us, our God. Amen. So as some of you know, for the last two Sundays, I haven't been here. Debbie's been taking the services, and for most of the time I was away, I was in Phoenix, Arizona, where it was delightfully warm. So down to 23 in the evenings, and on a cool late afternoon, it was 36, and we'd get up to 40 on some days. But they're still in spring, so it wasn't the serious heat of summer yet. That's still to come. But it's dry heat, so it's very different. So one day I went, oh, it's just a balmy 36. I'll go for a long walk up a hill. And, very different from our heat here. The cathedral is amazing. I should have put a picture up of one of the windows. But because it's so hot, the stained glass windows, the glass is not the delicate little glass that we have in our windows, neatly held by bits of lead. But they are great chunks of glass, bigger than my hand. And they're all held together with concrete, black concrete. And recently they had a fire in the cathedral, and I said, are the windows new? And the friend I was with said, oh no, they've been here since the 1960s. So they had survived the heat of summer. So it gets, between 40 and 50 outside, and then add that's on concrete, so the concrete heats up, so it's actually really hot around the outside of the cathedral. So it survives that, and it survived the fire. So that's the kind of place Phoenix is, along with rattlesnakes and scorpions. Don't leave your bag on the ground, a scorpion will crawl in and go home with you. So I've got to say the last week has been pretty chilly. Bit of a rude shock. I never thought I'd think this, but I kind of longed to go back to the heat of Phoenix. While I was there, it was great to be with people, and one of the people that was there was David Rice, who was the bishop who appointed me to be vicar of this parish 11 and a half years ago. He is Bishop of San Joaquin and Bishop Protector of the Third Order in the Americas. So while I was there, it was good to spend some time with him, to talk to him, and I publicly thanked him for appointing me to be vicar of this parish. He was feeling sad and miffed that I'd never done that publicly. So I made his day. So I thought, well, I'd like to take time to thank you all for the privilege of giving me the time to be Minister General. And what a gift that is. And I know other people have really struggled in that role because they weren't given that gift. So I deeply appreciate that. So thank you. So I thought I'd just start my sermon by talking about some of the themes that came up, not all of them, but just some of them, at the convocation. And we'll see if we can weave some of these into sermons over the next few weeks. So one of the first ones was, Mary is our model for living the gospel. We often think about the blokes for being our models, but I wonder how often we think about Mary being our model. And certainly for the Catholic and Orthodox traditions, Mary is the starting point in many ways. So I just kind of offer that. And one of the things we did was watch a movie called Through Her Eyes, which was about the relationship between Mary and Joseph. Jesus was a little blue-eyed and blonde-haired for me, but way too blue-eyed and blonde-haired for me, but never mind. One of the local Franciscans, Janet Strickler, then talked about living in gratitude. Starting all our days, starting our engagements with people from a place of gratitude rather than ingratitude or crankiness or how else we can think about that. And she had lots of ways of doing that and led us through some very creative exercises, some of which I brought back with me, so I'll put those out for people who are interested in that. She also talked about mending as a spiritual practice. So I'm reading a book at the moment that talks about how our economy, the world economy in the West, changed after World War II. Up until World War II, things were made to last. But after World War II, it changed to we need to buy more. We need people to have the latest, the best, the biggest, the most beautiful. And so our American economy in particular, with all those people who came back from the Second World War, they rejigged their economy to be one, a consumerist economy. and the need for things to not last, planned obsolescence. And she said, well, how do we counter that? You know, through darning socks, I had to say, look, my mother used to darn socks and they were really uncomfortable, so this is not ringing bells of niceness for me. But, you know, buying things that will last, getting things repaired, not just going for the cheapest. Mending as a spiritual practice. And I thought about how in a throwaway world that might affect my relationships with other people. Do I see other people as throwaway? Are other people seen as throwaway? Or do I see myself as throwaway in terms of my relationship with God? Or do I see other people as being throwaway in terms of God? And I also thought about how that affects my relationship with this world, God's creation. Do I see this as something that can be simply used, and when I've finished with it, throw it away? And then we have this woman, Elia Delio, Sister Elia Delio, who's a Franciscan writer and speaker of note, a very dense writer and speaker. You have to pay attention. You think you're following what she's saying, and then you suddenly go, huh, how did we get here? So here's a few of her thoughts, not in any kind of logical order. So she talked about creation being incomplete. So how often do we think about that, that creation is incomplete? I mean, Genesis kind of says, and it was done on day six, and it's all done, thank you very much. But actually science tells us that's simply not true, that creation is incomplete, and that God is still at work. And she said that it is consistently oriented towards new and more complex life. So it began with the single cells, and life is getting more complex, even with humans. So she talked a little bit about that in relationship to AI. So God is not finished yet with this world or with us. But also, this world will never go back to the way it was. That is the past. The push in creation is always towards completion. And if the world is incomplete, that also means that we are incomplete. So she did talk a little bit about original sin, and one of the people asked her a question about that in terms of brokenness, and she said, I would never describe a person as broken. I would only describe them as incomplete. God has not finished with us yet. We are not broken, we are incomplete. And then she talked about us being fractals of divine light and love. Bit of quantum, well, that's just a little bit of quantum physics and mathematics in there. So fractals are mathematical constructs that say something can be as simple and has a design, and then as you kind of zoom out from that and it gets more and more complex, that original simple design, it looks the same. It gets repeated, but in the way it's repeated, the whole looks very similar to that original thing. And the example of that is snowflakes. Snowflakes are a solid fractal. And one of the interesting things about fractals is no two fractals are alike. They are all unique. And so if we are fractals of divine light and love, we are all unique. There is no one else in the world like us. There never will be anyone else like us. There never has been anyone like us. We are a unique fractal of divine love and light. And then she said, what would it look like when all those fractals come together and make the whole of divine light and love? And I thought about that in terms of my relationships with some people who drive me a little bit nuts. And I thought, what is, you know, if I was to try and see them as incomplete, like I am an incomplete fractal of divine light and love. And on the last day we were doing these Lectio Divina groups studying, well, prayerfully considering our Bible passages. And one of the words that came out of that was Jesus said to the rich young ruler, there is one thing you need to do. And somebody said, There is one thing that I need to pay attention to. And I went, there is always one thing that we need to pay attention to be more complete. There is more than one thing, but there is one thing for us to pay attention to at this moment. And then when we have paid attention to that, there'll be the next thing. But I said, if I thought about that in terms of myself, and then somebody is driving me nuts, maybe if I tried to see them as an incomplete fractal of divine light and love, how might I relate to them in ways that helps them become more complete? And in doing so, maybe I become more complete myself. So it's a reframing of relationships. She also talked about God as love. So this is something that John talks about. And we kind of think that God is love. But she pointed out that God is love is very different from God is loving. Or God loves. At that point, loving or loves is something that God does. But to say that God is love is to say that the very being of God is love. And that when you experience love, that is God. And that the only way you can experience God is in love, because God is love. And that's how John describes God. God is love. And finally, she talked about the only way we can ever experience God is in the finite of this world. To know God is to experience this concrete reality, this world that we live in all its wonder and beauty, because God is love. So there's lots there, and some of that will bubble up in all kinds of ways over the next while. Well, it was a joy to be with fellow Franciscans, some of them whom I'd kind of conversed with on Facebook, or I'd seen on Facebook. Some had been talked about at meetings that I'd been at, some of which I've known, like Ken, I've known for nearly 20 years. So it was good to be back with them. And it was a joy when I got home to come to this Bible passage from the Gospels that we had this morning, because this passage is a very significant one for Francis and for Franciscans in general. It is, well, part of what we heard today was the gospel reading for the celebration of Saint Matthias in 1208 on the 24th of February. Francis was at that mass, and one of the versions of the story is that when he heard this reading, he clambered to his feet and shouted that at last he had found his way. This is what he had been searching for. And certainly this passage became the kind of source and roots of his rules of life. It's probably more likely he waited to the end of the service and went to ask the priest to explain what Jesus had meant. But either way, on the 24th of February 2008, the Order of Friars Minor, whether it was formally formed that day or just had its new direction, it was formed that day. And with their focus on holy poverty and living simply. So this passage that we just heard begins with a summary of what Jesus has been doing up to this point in Matthew's Gospel. And that is, he'd been teaching, and we spent time before Lent thinking about some of that teaching, the Sermon on the Mount. And then during Lent we thought about people who consistently lived the Sermon on the Mount, and Bonnie and I and Adrian all talked about people who had done that. And then it talks about how Jesus lived out what he had been teaching. So he had been teaching that the reign of heaven had come near, the kingdom of heaven has come near. Then he lived that out. And then, in what we heard today, he commissions 12 of them to be apostles. Apostles simply means, it's not a title. We use it as a title, the apostles, that's all good. But actually, it meant the sent ones. These are the ones who were sent. This is a pivotal moment in Matthew's gospel. Up until this point, these people had been followers. They had been amongst the crowd whom Jesus was teaching. They had watched him as he had healed and cast out demons. But now, They had been part of a support group, kind of doing all the background stuff. But now they had joined Jesus in proclaiming the kingdom of heaven has come near. And they are sent to continue all that Jesus has been doing up to this point. Sent to proclaim in words and actions that the kingdom of heaven has come near. A word that occurs in nearly all the commentaries about this passage is compassion, God's compassion. Because God is love, the reign of heaven is marked by love, marked by loving compassion. God's compassion for all people, the poor, the sick, the widows, the orphans, the outsider, all those who have been devastated by the system of their time. In Matthew 10:6, it talks about the lost sheep. The Greek word for lost is usually translated as lost in the New Testament, but in other places is translated in ways like the devastated. So it's more than just being lost. It's not that they've lost their way and they don't know where to go. It is that their lives have been torn apart by what's happening around them. They are devastated. So I wonder, as we listen to this, how we experience being sent. As we read the list of actions, what does that mean for how we proclaim in words and actions that the kingdom of heaven has come near? Because we are the sent ones of today. How are our lives marked with God's loving compassion? Well, just like those disciples who became sent ones, for Francis and those early brothers, hearing this gospel was also a pivotal moment. Up to this point, Francis had been a hermit. In many ways, a lot of the times when he came back into the city, he was ridiculed, and so were those who came with him. And he was clothed in the garb of a hermit. But as he heard this passage, he realized his calling. His calling to be sent. He joined the sent ones. And now he is sent out, like those apostles, to the poor, the sick, the widow, the orphan, and the outsider. All those who had been devastated by the economic and political and social systems of his time. And he deliberately sought them out and lived with them, living among them. And that meant he had to change how he dressed. So he threw aside his sandals and he got rid of his leather belt and put on a rope cord. And he got rid of his money bag and his spare clothes. And eventually he put on the garments of the poorest of the poor. In those days, the cheapest cloth was undyed, so it was grey. So if you go to places in England, you'll hear about Grey Friars. That's the first Franciscans. They wore the cheapest cloth, which was undyed and grey. In time, you couldn't get undyed cloth. You could only get dyed cloth. And the cheapest dyed cloth was brown. So Franciscans then moved from the grey of Francis's time to the brown that we wear today. Well, the first order wear. Some third order as well, actually. So he lived among the poor as one of them, as a beggar, wearing the clothes of a beggar, with a new focus on holy poverty and living simply. This notion of living simply is at the heart of my rule of life as a Franciscan and at the heart of all Franciscan rules of life. So what is living simply? Well, at a basic level, it means seeking to live not being attached to our possessions and our money. For the first order, it means not having any money or possessions. Well, it depends which province you're in and which church you're in. I was interested that one of the first order brothers has a storage locker with all his stuff in it. And I went, I didn't think they were allowed to do that. Certainly my friends who have been First Order brothers had to sell everything. And when they came out with a very small amount of money and they had to start life again. So two of the older men who were at our convocation had been first order brothers, and one of them commented, well, he's still working because the retirement plan for being a first order brother wasn't that great. So so for them, owning nothing is at the heart of who they are. But for us, well, that's a little extreme, but it does mean paying attention to all the ways that I'm tempted to buy into our consumer economic system, all the ways that I'm tempted to have the latest or the best or the newest. And before I buy anything, my rule says that I am to ask, do I really need this? And if so, what might be good enough? I'm entirely sure I asked that question as I stood in a hat shop in San Francisco. But I did not buy the most expensive hat. Not by a long shot. I looked at them, and then I went, and I don't need those. It also means letting go of the need to earn or have more, whatever more might mean. So that might be more money, but it might be more things, but it might also be more recognition or more blessings. And so when I was when we moved from having regional deans to archdeacons, I was one of the most vocal opponents of this move. And one of my friends rang me up and he said, John, you need to be careful because Bishop Andrew is thinking about asking you to be one of those archdeacons, and if you keep being against it, he might change his mind. And I went, I don't care. I don't need to be an archdeacon. I mean, I'll think about it if he asks me, but I actually think the idea is not a great idea. So I will continue to say that. And then he knows what he's getting if he does ask me. But I know that for some of other people around the church, being an archdeacon, being somebody of note, is very important. More important than doing the role. It's how we accumulate stuff to ourselves. And we have to constantly monitor, do I need more? And why do I want this more? Instead, I am invited to live gratefully in response to the life that God has generously offered me and all of us. So back to gratitude. Living simply also means resisting the temptation to see my possessions as mine, as just reward for my labours. I was interested at how long it would take one of the very wealthy in this country to complain that they were being picked on when it was revealed how little tax they pay. And I wondered how long before they put up their hand and say, but I have worked very hard for this and I have earned it and I deserve it and it's mine. Well, living simply says that actually nothing we have is mine. It is all a gift from God, and it's given to us to be as generous to us as God has been to us. Be as generous to others as God has been generous to us. I remember having a conversation with a group of young people who came from Remuera in Auckland, and they were talking about their parents and how, you know, that they worked and the stuff they had and they'd earned it and it was theirs. And I said to them, or another way of putting this from a Christian perspective is, these are simply things that God has given you out of God's generosity. How might you be generous with these things? How might you hold them lightly and let go of them? Now, that conversation continued, and I had no idea what effect that had on them, but I know the person who was the youth leader, and he said they talked about what I said all the way back, and they continued to talk about it for weeks later. No one had said to them that what you have isn't because you earned it, it's because God has given you it. And yet surely that's at the heart of the gospel. Well, I'm Franciscan, so I think so. And I'm always surprised when people don't agree with me. Like, what? Surely this is what we all think. The last thing, and a lot of the time we as Franciscans don't even think about this, is living in ways that does not add to the poverty of others and that does not damage this world. So at a basic level, this means buying ethically, trying to be informed about the choices we made. This includes paying attention to the work conditions of those who gathered the raw materials, those who worked in the production of the thing that we work, that we are now enjoying, and then those who work in the transport of those things from wherever they're made to where we are, to the shops where we buy them and the kind of employment conditions that we have. I know I was always amazed when my youngest daughter was applying for retail jobs and how poorly paid even the managers of those shops were. Very expensive high-end shops were getting minimum wage as workers, and the managers were barely above minimum wage. The steps up were tiny. You'd never guess that walking into that shop. Very expensive stuff in the shops. So it's about paying attention to all of those things and thinking, well, you know, do I buy there or do I buy somewhere else? Thinking about how those things, how the way those things are made, how they are produced, add to climate change, how they add to biodiversity loss, or what pollution do they leave behind. And in all of that, hearing the voice of those who are mostly affected by some of those things, the voice of Indigenous people, the vulnerable and the marginalised, those who in a throwaway society are seen as throwawayable, those, we might say, going back to our gospel reading, who are most devastated by what we buy. So the question that sits in my rule is, how are the choices we make in what we buy part of the renewal of creation and the enrichment and empowerment of people's lives? We are today's sent ones, and at the heart of that sending is the call to live simply, however we understand that. So I wonder what Jesus' instructions offer us in our understanding of living the gospel, proclaiming in our actions and words that the reign of heaven has come near. So I invite you to think about that for a moment and to have a conversation with the people next to you about that, or anything that you heard that stood out for you, or anything that you heard that you vehemently disagreed with. Any of those things, you can have a conversation for a couple of minutes, and then we will skip the creed and move along to the prayers. Mm-hmm.